Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, ricksmithshow.com. So much to get to. Got to get right to it. I've got Sarah Burris, Raw Story reporter, on the line. Sarah, thanks for being here.
Hey, Rick. How are you?
I am good. There's just so much to get to. I got to jump right to it. Apprentice, Sarah.
That was the highlight of my day. I thought maybe I'd heard something wrong, you know, like maybe my ears were playing tricks on me because, you know, I'll be listening to something while I'm typing and all of a sudden I'm like, wait, what? Did he just? No. And so I run it back on the DVR, and then sure enough, he's like, apprentice. Hey, apprenticeship. Oh my God, I just figured that out. Like, oh my God, this dude has the nuclear code. I'm worried that people don't know what we're talking about.
No, I'm laughing because, you know, obviously he was giving a speech. And, you know,
bless his heart. So this is a speech where the president was speaking to young people and people who are working on a degree to get into a second career, maybe people who've been shoved out by automation who want to learn how to do, you know, like wind power tech stuff, whatever. So he brings him to the White House to talk about his education initiative and his training programs and all of the stuff that he wants to put together. And a big part of obviously moving into that kind of career is apprenticeships. You know, like if you're an ironsmith or a steelworker, like they have really good apprenticeship programs.
Yep. All the building trades have fantastic ones. And not only are they great apprenticeship programs, and not only are they free, you actually get paid while you learn.
Yeah.
Especially, the union ones anyway.
Right.
And you walk out with incredible skills, with good wage careers, and it doesn't cost, you're not saddled with a lifetime of debt. I'm actually really in favor of apprenticeship programs.
Me too.
It's just interesting that he boogered this up.
He had a TV show called The Apprentice, and when he was reading his speech about apprenticeships, he goes, oh, that's where that comes from. And he literally said, I'm just putting that together now. He said it out loud.
He did.
To the crowd of people. And that's the thing that I'm so confused about. I'm not sure if I'm worried that he doesn't know what the word apprenticeship means or apprentice means, or that he was okay with saying that out loud in front of a room full of people and a bank of cameras.
I mean,
he has the nuclear codes.
There's part of me that goes, we just stop right here.
Right?
Because
you're like, hold up. You know, I'm done. I'm getting off this ride.
The world just stops right here. Because this is just so ludicrous. I mean, it does get worse, though.
There are a lot of words that I don't know the meaning to or that I've never heard before. I learn new words all the time.
Yes.
I'm not the president, and apprenticeship is not one of them, after I've been spending a decade working on a show called The Apprentice.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of difficult to figure out, right?
Bless his heart. I know. I'm sorry.
How did I know that was coming?
It comes out. I'm from the South. It's like when you feel bad for somebody, but you want to be a little bit condescending, it just comes out.
There you go. You know, thanks to dictionary.com, who on Tuesday was very angry. And it's bad when the dictionary's angry. I learned the word quisling, which is a person who betrays his or her own country by aiding an invading enemy, often serving later in a puppet government.
Nice.
And both fit here.
Yeah, no, they definitely do.
Wow. You know, he's our president. Yay. And Jake Tapper, he can't figure it out. He has no idea what's going on.
That was another highlight. I mean, this week was so weird. It was just full of one crazy thing after another. And Tapper, who, by the way, lives up the street from me, I run into him all the time in the neighborhood, and he's a super sweet guy, total family dude, you know, and I see him today look straight into the camera and go, what the hell is going on? And everybody starts laughing at his political table. He's not laughing. Straight faced, he goes, seriously, what the hell is going on?
Seriously. And, but here's the thing, Sarah. I've been asking that question for 18 months now.
Right. He's pushed Tapper to the limit.
Well, hey, Jake, welcome to the club.
Yeah, we have shirts. They're union printed.
I need one.
Right?
There you go. I'll wear it tomorrow. But, you know, it's just weird because, you know.
What the hell is going on? It's and honestly, I mean, the people on the panel are laughing and I was kind of laughing, too, because it's like you got to laugh to keep from crying.
Yeah,
like that's what I keep saying to myself.
Yeah,
got to laugh to keep from crying.
Or slitting your wrist and sitting in the hot bathtub. I'm with you. Yeah. You don't want to do any of those. Evidently, and this is one of those things that's not funny. It's being reported, and I'd love to get your thoughts. Evidently, Trump had irrefutable evidence day one that all of the stuff that's been going on, all of the information on the Russian hacks, he's had all this stuff all along and has chosen to ignore, and not just ignore it, but to vehemently deny and fight back and try and discredit it all.
Yeah, he knew 2 weeks prior to his inauguration that irrefutable evidence, like the raw data, text messages. I mean, like when you look at Mueller's indictment for the 12 Russian hackers, the forensic detail that is in that is just absurd. The amount of stuff that they have, I was really surprised that they even published that because now I think the world knows, oh my God, the United States actually knows what they're doing whenever it comes to cyber espionage. But he had that information. They gave it to him. And he reluctantly, is what the New York Times published, he reluctantly, sort of begrudgingly, is like, all right, well. And immediately, the people on his team who were in the room at the time, they start putting together a press release. And the press release is about how the Russian hacking didn't have anything to do with his victory. That was their concern. And it's just been that from then on.
Yeah, that's been the frame. And what's interesting is even, you know, I guess even Sean Hannity's come around to the idea that 2016 election was rigged.
Yeah, that was another weird kind of moment. And I think what he was trying to do is he was trying to figure out a way that he could confess that it was rigged or confess that, you know, something was amiss. And blame it on Barack Obama, and then make a case that Donald Trump would step in, you know, ride in on his horse and save everybody. The problem with that is that when you acknowledge that, you know, the election was hacked and that the election wasn't valid, you're turning against what Donald Trump has said and is continuing to say over and over and over again. And so I got to write the story. Guess what? Sean Hannity just totally betrayed his friend because he's too stupid to know better.
Well, I agree with that completely. You know, there's actually nothing surprising about that. And save his own skin.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I was shocked that he went that far. And I really do think it's because he's too stupid to know better.
So do you think that at some point that everyone starts trying to save their own skin and they all turn on Trump and they all, you know, kind of throw this in? Or is the mafia culture so strong that they don't turn on him?
I think the mafia culture is so strong they won't turn on him. That saying, I mean, I don't know about the ancillary people. I'm talking about the family. The people like Donald Trump Jr. who was in the meeting, Ivanka, Jared, I don't think that those people ever turn on him. And, you know, I don't know how that works out. I don't know how. I think Mueller has that figured out. I think he's probably trying to figure out other ways to get around that. Because obviously, I mean, we saw the questioning where Donald Trump Jr. said to Mueller, right after he got out of that Trump Tower meeting, he had a phone call to an unlisted phone number. Well, Trump Tower and Trump's office is an unlisted number. And they talked for what, 15 minutes, 18 minutes, something like that. And so Mueller asks him, who was it? And he's like, I don't remember.
I don't remember. Could have been Stormy Daniels.
Right?
Yep.
I mean, so Trump Jr. is not going to roll over. I don't know that everybody else is going to be, you know, as lucky.
Yeah. I don't think Kush holds up. There's part of me that goes, he won't do well in prison.
I was kind of thinking the same thing.
I think Kush is the weak link.
I wonder about Ivanka, because you see how obsessed he is with her and that he's in love with her and all of these other things. Yeah. If Ivanka starts to look like she's going to go to jail, what is he going to do?
That's a good point. You know, and what is she going to do? I mean, you're right. I mean, the creepiest thing I ever saw was, you know, Donald Trump saying that I think she was like 18 at the time. If she weren't his daughter, he'd be, you know, doing, you know, the do.
Right. Yeah. Ew.
Yeah. Ew. That's the right response. Good for you. So how are they going to deflect this? How are they going to, make this Russia thing go away? I mean, I saw Trump. Evidently, I guess we're comparing Democrats to MS-13 now. Is that happening?
Yeah, he tried to come up with something where he could deflect and start attacking Democrats and try and start making a big deal. It's weird. It's like he keeps trying to do things that turn people towards something else, but it all seems to have to do with Russia. And
all roads.
It all seems to have to do with Putin. And so, and at the same time, you've got the Russians who probably bugged the room that they were speaking in, who are pushing, like slowly leaking out all of this information about their 2-hour meeting. And, you know, so a lot of this stuff is like, it keeps coming up and it keeps coming up and it's not going away.
Nope.
So this is one of those things where no matter how many tweets he sends out, and I mean, already there have been reports about he, took some extra executive time to tweet and watch cable news. He was supposed to have a debriefing, a CIA debriefing the next morning after he got back. He blew through that and decided to tweet all morning as well. So I think this is him having a freak out and seeing all of the backlash and trying to figure out, like, scramble. He's scrambling.
Yeah.
And he's trying, and we're watching it in real time.
No, I mean, it's actually quite interesting to watch as he does seem to devolve a little bit here. But, you know, here's the thing. There was a SurveyMonkey poll, Axios SurveyMonkey poll just came out today that said 79% of Republicans think he did great during the little press conference. I mean, that's just how crazy it is. I mean, it's literally just nuts, just crazy. But Sarah, I appreciate the thoughts. Good stuff. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh no, you're there.
There I am. Sorry,
I had a couple more things. I thought you had disappeared.
Okay, no, it went haywire on me, and so I like rebooted really fast.
I thought you had disappeared, and I'm glad you didn't, because I wanted to ask about Michael Steele. Evidently, he's claiming that, you know, because, you know, weird thing with the daughter. Steele's claiming that Trump's got daddy issues. Is that right?
Yeah. And if you think about it, that makes sense. I thought for a long time, I was reading a lot about his mother and thinking, well, maybe he has mommy issues. But I mean, maybe that makes sense. I didn't know the history with his father, you know, being so hard on him and basically saying, you know, you can't do this. You can't do this. Like Trump saw, one of the things that Michael Steele talked about is Trump really saw the future in Manhattan and said, you know, I want to get into this market. And his father said, you're from Queens. You can't do that. And of course, you know, 70 years ago, the idea of being in a borough, you know, which borough you were from is a big deal in New York. And now, obviously, nobody can afford to live in Manhattan.
Right.
So, so he really saw the future in that respect and proved his, you know, worked to prove his father wrong. And so I wonder if, you know, we've heard stories about him being really hard on his sons and just being a wretched human being. I'm wondering if that's where it comes from, that he's always going to be trying to be better to prove to his long dead father that he can do it, that he can be the best, that he can be the top. And it's never going to be enough for him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the,
it's interesting.
That's the pathetic thing, is that he's going to keep having to try and do this to himself.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting train of thought. There's part of me that goes, moreover, I look at his relationship with Roy Cohn as, you know, one of those crazy moments where I wonder who had more influence, the overburdening father or the crazy HUAC, anti-gay guy, anti-Semitic Jew in Roy Cohn.
Probably both of them. I mean, I bet Roy Cohn was probably the more approving of the two. He was something that, you know, someone that Trump could learn from and, you know, was willing to teach him. And, you know, his father was not.
Crazy, crazy, crazy stuff. I wanted to get your thoughts on, was it fair that the California Polytechnical State University there took the scholarship away from this this poor wrestler who was just out, you know, exercising his free speech in calling, you know, people names? Was that fair?
Well, I think what happened is they probably have one of those disclosures where you have to have a certain kind of ethical behavior. So, you know, it's one thing to be a Nazi, but to act out on it. And that was the funny thing. Like he basically got into it with a bunch of protesters because he was protesting as a Nazi, and people started calling him a Nazi. And so then he beat the crap out of them. So, you know, it's all fun and games until you start violently trying to kill people.
But isn't that what you want in a wrestler? I mean, wouldn't that be good for the team? Good for the morale?
I mean, I guess boxing. Maybe he can join the boxing club.
Yeah. So no scholarship. And he's very unhappy. It's unfair. It's unfair,
oh, no,
Sarah.
Poor Nazi.
Poor Nazi. And speaking of poor Nazi, evidently David Duke back in the news comparing Trump to Jesus, huh?
That was the weirdest thing. I mean, of course, this was in a rant as part of the anti-Zionist media, and he was celebrating Trump's speech and his joint press conference with Putin and proclaiming fake news because the media wasn't celebrating it along with him. And he said, how did he articulate it? It was something like, they came after Jesus like this too. And it was just like, really? We're going to go there.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Poor Jesus.
For real. I feel like even Jesus on that one's being like, you know, I'm good.
Exactly. Please don't do that to me. You're ruining the legacy.
Or, you know, Old Testament Jesus would be like, hold my beer.
prosperity gospel Jesus would be go, my hair is better.
Right. Exactly. He'd have like the perfect coif.
That just went right way off the rails.
I know, sorry.
And finally, I wasn't going to bring this up, but I have to. Evidently, we have a congressman who longs for the days where we could call you women folk sluts.
Oh, my God. And tell us to behave.
Behave. Why can't you behave?
And here's the thing. Like, this was like during a radio thing that he had before he was a member of Congress in 2012. And he was railing against Sandra Fluke. And then this morning he doubled down on it on a radio show saying, yeah, no, women need to behave and I should be able to call them sluts. As a congressman,
he
said this. Not that that obviously should stop anybody in the Republican Party, but
isn't that kind of how we perpetuate the race? I mean, isn't that how the species continues? Just kind of throwing that out there.
I mean, this dude has some serious issues. I mean, maybe he's gay. Who knows?
But don't you think this is kind of the Republican mantra, though? I mean, because we see a lot of these Republicans. I mean, I think of Foster Freeze, who, you know, the famous quote of, you know, in my day, we just gave gals aspirin and they put it between their knees.
or the legitimate rape comment from what's his Missouri? This is the part of the Republican Party that doesn't respect women, doesn't like that they're outside of the home, doesn't like that, you know, somehow they are threatened by powerful women or women just being on their same level. Somehow it brings them down instead of empowering them or bringing them up, which is what it should be. All boats should rise. And with them, it attacks their own masculinity and their own, you know, need to be important and be the top dog. And that's just pathetic, man.
Yeah, but as the tide rises, the big boats crush the dinghies. So...
The cruise boats, man.
I don't know what it is. It's one of these crazy moments. Like, I just saw this. I don't know if you saw this from North Carolina. Evidently, there's a law in North Carolina that evidently once you start having sex, women can't say no. I guess a very pro-rape thing. It's a pro-rape thing. You should be allowed to finish.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's the bizarrest thing I've seen. And I had to actually look it up because I thought it was like The Onion or something. Or like, you know, an X-rated Onion. But no, it's actually a law.
Well, the Republican Party is going to have their convention in North Carolina. So every woman should leave.
There you go. Good stuff. Sarah, as always, enjoyable, fun, entertaining, and informative. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You too. Good stuff. Sarah Burris, reporter over at Raw Story. Make sure you check out her work. Or as our friend in the chat room says, she is today's Molly Ivins. I'm okay with that. Close enough. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.